I'm Tony Sarabia. It's the Morning Shift. In a lot of cities around the country, the number of black school teachers has been on the decline in recent years. Here in Chicago, the group Educators for Excellence is working to make sure that trend does not continue. Among other priorities, the teacher-led education policy group wants to make sure school districts are doing everything they can to retain and empower teachers of color. Acacia Wilson-Feinberg is the executive director of Educators for Excellence Chicago. She joins me now. And I should mention the organization also has chapters in several other cities, including Philadelphia and L.A. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about the decline of African-American teachers across the country. There was a report out last year that showed a drop in 9 major American cities, including Chicago. What's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're seeing is a trend that has to do with the whole pipeline. It's a problem in Chicago, and it's a problem across the country. And so it's everything from recruitment into teaching to teacher preparation, and then certainly the hiring practices and even the retention. We know that less people are going into education, and that includes teachers of color.
And as part of that, have you been able to talk to people who have thought about a career in education and backed away? And I'm wondering if so, is part of it just they're frustrated by what they're seeing, that they're just taking this sort of preemptive strike?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, one of the things which is a good thing is that folks of color who are graduating from colleges and universities have more options. Mm-hmm. They're able to go into more fields. And so I was actually looking at some data from 2006 to 2015, where we saw in public universities in Illinois, African-Americans, college graduates going into education there were around 1,500 folks going into teaching. And so that was in 2006 and 2015. That number was down to 878.
Wow.
And then for Latino Hispanic folks going into education, it was around 1,300 in 2006. And by 2015, it was down to around 1,000. And so I do think that we have more folks of color graduating and less going into education.
It's interesting, you know, more choices. And they're deciding, well, I can do this maybe make more money and not have the frustrations that a lot of teachers face in their careers.
That's right. And so I think some of this is about distributing leadership. That's why I'm excited about the work that we do at E4E, making sure that classroom teachers actually have a voice in the policies and the issues that affect their classrooms and the profession. It is that, you know, giving teachers a voice and bridging the gap between policy and practice that I think will encourage more people to go into the field.
Well, Acacia, one of the things that you mentioned in this sort of menu of why we're seeing a decline is the hiring process. And as you know, a couple of months ago, WBEZ's Sarah Karp uncovered the fact that here in Chicago for CPS, the screening process for teachers discriminated against black candidates and at least in part helped explain why the number of teachers here has dwindled. Your reaction to that finding and how this has reached, you know, people who were thinking about it and have given up because of the process in the past?
Yeah, I was definitely troubled to learn that that practice was in place. And I commend CPS for realizing that the impact that it was having and making sure to take action to end the practice. And my first reaction actually was to try to tell the teachers who were in the working group. So we had a group of teachers who were very concerned about teacher diversity. They came together and started to brainstorm solutions that might help end create more diversity. And so I saw the story and immediately said, oh, my gosh, I've got to let the teachers who are in the working group know, mm-hmm. because I knew that it would end up shaping some of the ideas that they had for solutions.
Were you at all surprised by the process and the fact that it was going on?
I mean, I think I was somewhat surprised, and yet I think that a practice like this mirrors some of the broader issues that we see. I mean, I don't think that it was intentional, mm-hmm. and we know that implicit bias is something that we face in our culture, and certainly in our city, and that is no different in our schools. And so it's important that we are able to train our teachers, our administrators, and our leaders on understanding seeing where this implicit bias might exist and making sure that practices don't continue that, you know, make it so that that implicit bias plays out in our schools and in our classrooms.
I want to read a statement that we received from CPS. It says CPS is working hard to ensure that teachers reflect the diversity of Chicago's students, which is why we launched new partnerships with community groups like Grow Your Own and have strengthened partnerships with groups like Golden Apple. Although nationally, teacher diversity remains a challenge for all school districts, CPS is working to lead the effort to reflect diversity in the classrooms. We're looking at a school population here in Chicago where the white student population is less than 10%. It's about 9%.
That's right.
The majority of the population, African-American, followed by Latino students. Why is diversity, talk about the importance of diversity in the classroom, why it's important for a young African-American student to see an African-American teacher up at the head of the classroom?
Yeah, well, I think that teacher diversity is important for students of color, certainly. There's, you know, new research that suggests that if an African-American student has an African-American teacher, they are three times more likely to be referred to a talented and gifted program than if their teacher is white. But I even think about my own experience as a classroom teacher, and I had very few African-American students. I think I had two black students, and the rest were Native American, Latino, and white. And just knowing that a teacher is often the first leader that we put in front of kids, the impact that it can have for a kid to see, even a white student, this is a black leader. Mm-hmm. This is someone who is educated and is in a position of authority on a daily basis. And so I think this is something that's important for students of color, but also for students of all backgrounds and for teachers of all backgrounds.
We are talking about the lack of African-American teachers here in Chicago, and it reflects a national trend. Joining me in the studio is Akasia Wilson-Feinberg. She's the executive director of Educators for Excellence Chicago. Their organization has chapters in several cities, not Philadelphia, as I mentioned, but in L.A., Boston, Connecticut, Minnesota, and New York. I want to introduce another voice into the conversation here, Aaron Talley, a public school teacher on Chicago's Far South Side. He's also a member of the Diversity Committee at Educators for Excellence. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You wrote an op-ed yet to be published, but right at the top you say that you were considering leaving the profession. Why?
I just think it was because I was experiencing a little bit of disillusionment. I had gone into the profession thinking that I was going to have a level of autonomy around what I got to teach the students, particularly just around the social justice issues that I care about, so like issues of race, identity, teaching them about their history. And I was just really excited to be a part of that movement and change for students. And I see teaching as an opportunity for movement building within students. However, after getting into the classroom, I started to realize the effects of high-stakes testing and accountability. And I think what that did for me is I realized that so much of what teachers are forced to deal with is not about what actually helps students learn. It's about data and mandates. And I think that disillusionment sort of, you know, made me feel like, well, is this the right place to, you know, to be the change agent that I want to be?
One of the things, Aaron, that you mentioned toward the end of your piece is you say administrators must provide racially affirming work environments that encourage teachers of color to stay. Suss that out for us, racially affirming work environments.
I think it's about just addressing the elephants in the room. When you are one black male or you are one Hispanic teacher and you know that the staff is predominantly white, there are conversations that are going to be had, and the students are majority of color, right? There might be conversations around discipline. There might be conversations about family, culture that might be awkward for a lot of participants involved. And I think or sometimes when you're the one black male, you might be the disciplinarian of the school just by virtue of the fact of your identity. And so I think it was about having a racially affirming environment means that, you know, you have administrators who are like, let's have this conversation. Let's reflect on who we are as teachers and what we're bringing to the students. And understanding that when you have a teacher of color in the classroom who matches the identity of their students, that they're bringing something special. They're bringing something valuable, and that needs to be sussed out.
Akasia, do you think that's not happening enough?
Which isn't happening enough.
The providing that environment. Number one, providing that. And number two, sort of what Aaron started his comments with, that, you know, there isn't that autonomy that not only teachers of color, I would imagine, but all teachers would like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do think that one of the recommendations that the working group made was actually around making sure that all teachers feel equipped to create that environment, because I do think that there is a discomfort having really tough conversations about race and being able to facilitate those moments when they happen in schools and classroom settings. And so absolutely, I feel that, you know, if teachers and administrators were equipped with those skills, we would see more inclusive environments, even in a case where the teacher is not a teacher of color. They just feel comfortable having those conversations.
Talk about the challenges facing teachers of color here in Chicago and what needs to be done here on the morning shift. So once, Acacia, you get African-American teachers in the classroom, and you talked a little bit about this. I'm wondering if you could expand on this.
Sure.
Getting more teachers, African-American teachers, involved in decision-making. I mean, what are some of the ideas being put forth by your group?
Yeah. So I think that this is about making sure that there is leadership throughout the school building. And so that is true in this topic and in other topics that our teacher members have worked on. For example, there was a paper that teachers crafted last year that was around teacher evaluation. And one of the things that they noted is that there is a heavy burden on administrators to put in place all of the steps that it takes to get through the teacher evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And we have immense leadership in the building through all of the classroom teachers who are there. And so what are the different ways that we have administrators and teachers coming together and figuring out how to take different pieces of the puzzle and, you know, advance the leadership of each individual in the building, not just putting the burden on the administrator solely. And I think that's what needs to happen in the case of this issue as well.
Aaron, do you think it's part of it is sort of selling, if you will, this idea to administrators? Like, look, you don't have to take on this burden all your own. We want to help you.
Right. Can you say more about that? What do you mean exactly?
Is this something that you think administrators don't recognize? And do you see it as a selling point to say, look, we can help you here. Just let us help you. It's not something that, as Acacia was saying, that administrators feel like it's their burden to take on, whatever the issue is.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a complicated question. I agree that it's about releasing some of the constraints administrators have on themselves so that they can feel freer to rely on the leadership. I think just with so many pressures that comes with being an administrator and just being in the CPS environment, I think sometimes they might feel that impulse to kind of take charge of everything and just handle things. Whereas if I think that we allow them to be a little bit more free in how they conduct things, then they probably will open up that leadership.
And a lot of there's like a popular term right now, just along the lines of what you're saying, there's this thing called microaggressions. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that there are little micro moments that are happening where there are breaches of kind of our agreed upon norms around diversity and inclusiveness, and an administrator can't be in all of those moments.
Right. Yeah.
And so how are they then, again, you know, releasing some leadership and giving every teacher and ultimately even students the skills to be able to address these moments?
We hear a lot about that at colleges and universities. Can either of you talk about how that's playing out in K through 12? And you know, what lessons can you look at to how it's being dealt with on the university level that teachers in K through 12 could apply?
Well, I mean, I think some very minor things that, like, when... So, for instance, if there's a white teacher and they're, like, mispronouncing a student's name because it's not a sort of standard normalized name, you know, I think that can be a microaggression, right? Like, so what are you really suggesting when you have that, or what are you really thinking about when you're making fun of names, right? When teachers are kind of sometimes talking about students' backgrounds, and they might say, oh, yeah, well, they come from, you know, I had to do this for this student because, you know, they come from a broken home. And, you know, that teacher is well-meaning. You know, that teacher is, you know, trying to, create space for how they might help that student. However, as a teacher of color, I might be wondering, are you making too many assumptions about what this child can do? So I do think it does come out. And that's just between, that's the teacher-to-student interaction. I mean, even from teachers to teachers.
Or teachers to administrators, perhaps.
Yeah, or teachers to administrators. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we were just talking about this, actually, like a small thing where a student is like called out for the color of their skin. And Aaron shared an example with me where there was a white teacher who was working alongside him who said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you were there in that moment. Mm. And, you know, his reflection was sort of that, like, well, even if I weren't here in that moment, how might you have navigated that conversation? And so I think it is just really giving teachers the skills that they need to feel comfort in those situations.
You know, it's not easy being a teacher. I have a couple of relatives who are teachers. They tell me that all the time. So with that in mind, I'm wondering, what advice do each of you have for either young Black teachers who are just getting into the profession or young Black college students who might be considering the profession? I'll start with you, Aaron.
I would tell them that to try to ignore all of the politics and everything that's in the space, that at the end of the day, that this is such an important job and you have to ground yourself in the fact that you are working with youth, that you are working with the next generation, and that you need to just kind of stay forthright in your commitment to that. But also, I think it's really a great profession in terms of the skill sets that you get. I think, you know, when you are learning how to help someone acquire new knowledge, right? When you are learning how to, I personally believe that the classroom, children are people, right? So when you are learning to manage like different behaviors and thoughts and feelings and emotions, and how do I get students to be really engaged in a topic that they really might not be engaged in? Those are all such wonderful skills, facilitation skills that go beyond just, you know, the classroom itself. So stay grounded in your commitment and understand that you get so many amazing skills from
Acacia.
This profession.
I would say that there is just an enormous amount of change that can be made from inside the classroom. One of the things that I really wish had been there when I was a classroom teacher is something like E4E that didn't leave me with the impression that I had to leave classroom teaching in order to have an impact. Mm. We really do need to understand what the experience is like for practitioners in order to create better policy. And so it is actually a huge opportunity to lead outside of the classroom, even as you serve your students every day.
E4E stands for Educators for Excellence, and Acacia Wilson-Feinberg is the executive director of E4E Chicago. Also in the studio, Aaron Talley, a public school teacher on Chicago's far south side, talking about the challenges African-American teachers face in the classroom and the shortage of those teachers in the ranks. Thanks to both of you for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Standing Rock. Don't go anywhere.